will have.
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today's 19th of March. We will continue listening to Tenton's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome to another episode of Shantideva and the Bodhisattva's Way of Life. We're going through Chapter 3 on commitment. For those who may have joined the program for the first time, the text we are following is an instruction manual on how to develop the mind that wishes to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all beings everywhere. Of course, we all want enlightenment, or if you like, the state completely free of all dissatisfaction and suffering, but we can either work just for our own liberation or feeling great compassion for all others in unsatisfactory and unsatisfying states just like ourselves, take on the responsibility to guide all others to liberation, as well as taking ourselves there. It's the second motivation that impelled Shantideva to write this text as a roadmap to achieve his goal. The first chapter is on the benefits of bodhicitta, the mind to attain enlightenment for the benefit of all. And the second, on the seven limb practice to accumulate the positive potential we so badly need and to purify interfering obstacles. The seven limb practice is prostrating to pay respect, making offerings, confession of negativities and downfalls, rejoicing in one's good fortune, asking highly realized masters to teach, asking them to remain and not pass on before their time, and dedication. It is common in the Tibetan tradition to do this as a preliminary practice before any other virtuous actions, to set the scene, so as to speak, and make the mind ready. Shantideva covers the first three limbs in the second chapter and then completes the practice with the last four limbs in the chapter we are now on. We've covered all the limbs up to dedication and are going through specific dedications after the author led with a verse of general dedication of his body, possessions, and positive potential. That verse reads, "Without any sense of loss, I shall give up my body and enjoyments, as well as all my virtues of the three times, for the sake of benefiting all." If you were with us last time, you will remember we said that of the three, possessions are the easiest to give away, then the body, but the hardest is the positive potential. We want things to go well for us, but they won't unless we have the positive potential that causes happiness and well-being. If we don't have positive potential, the conditions for success just cannot arise, no matter what we do. That's why some people do well without even trying, while others struggle and struggle, but never seem to achieve much. So strong positive potential is very valuable if we want to either just in life enjoy life's pleasures or become a highly realized master. You can imagine then why it's so hard to give up our positive potential to others, accepting that we may live in poverty and destitution so that they may prosper. What would you prefer? To give up your body, perhaps to be a servant or slave to someone else, but still live in some comfort, or exist free but naked in a hole in the ground and eat rotten flesh like Gollum? To become a Buddha, we have to be prepared to physically live like Tolkien's nasty little creature, but without the obsessed mind. In fact, we must cling to nothing at all, least of all our physical comfort. By giving up all, sorrow is transcended, Shantideva says, and my mind will realize the sorrowless state. It is best that I now give everything to all beings in the same way as I shall at death. Having given this body up for the pleasure of all living beings, by killing, abusing, and beating it, may they always do as they please. Although they may play with my body and make it a source of jest and blame, because I have given it up to them, what is the use of holding it dear? Therefore I shall let them do anything to it that does not cause them any harm, and when anyone encounters me, may it never be meaningless for him. And that is where we got up to last time. Remember, we said that anyone who causes us harm is in fact creating the karma to suffer much more in the future than we will now. So it's better to feel some compassion for our tormentor rather than get angry and bitter. In fact, best of all is if we can wish the harm giver the highest peace and happiness. And that is what Shantideva says when he says, "And when anyone encounters me, may it never be meaningless for him." Shantideva doesn't only wish that those who encounter him get some immediate benefit, but also that he's able to make a connection that introduces or helps them on the path to complete freedom from suffering. And that's the greatest benefit he could bring them. Why, you may ask, should we wish to bring the greatest benefit to those who wish us harm? Surely, we should defend ourselves from the harm and, if possible, get them before they get us. Well, look at the difference in the effect on your mind between benefiting someone and doing them harm. Goodwill and the determination not to harm has a soothing and calming effect on the mind, whereas the wish to retaliate or to harm others is rough and leaves an aggressive tendency on our mind. In fact, wishing others well, even if they harm us, is the best way to protect ourselves and promote good mental health, whereas the mind of anger, hatred, and revenge just gives power to the harm giver. Well, think about it. If you have an enemy you hate, even the very mention of their name makes you tense and unhappy. Your enemy only has to write their name on a piece of paper and leave it in your letterbox. They know that as soon as you see it, the paper will make you uptight and miserable. In other words, the enemy you hate doesn't even have to be in the same country as you to have power and influence over you. Whereas, if someone you have goodwill for sends you their name on a piece of paper, you immediately have a warm, helpful feeling for them. The power is all yours. Nagarjuna in his text, Precious Garland, points to this in the verse, "Even if you seek to harm an enemy, you should remove your own defects and cultivate good qualities. Through that, you will help yourself, and the enemy will be displeased." And apart from genuinely wishing to benefit others through an altruistic attitude, that is why Shantideva says in the next verse, "If in those who encounter me a faithful or an angry thought arises, may that eternally become the source for fulfilling all their wishes. May all who say bad things to me or cause me any other harm, and those who mock and insult me, have the fortune to fully awaken." As Pema Chodron points out, all the thoughts and actions of others involving us, even if they are negative, can create a connection that will benefit now and in the future. Remember the story of how Shantideva came to teach this text. For new people in the program and those who've forgotten, the legend goes that when Shantideva was staying at Nalanda Monastery, the greatest Buddhist place of learning in ancient times, he appeared to do nothing else but eat, sleep, and go to the toilet. On the basis of that, the other monks, with no respect for him at all, called him the Three Discriminations. Eventually, thinking that he didn't deserve to stay in the monastery, they decided to humiliate him by asking him to teach. At first he declined, but they persisted, and eventually he agreed. On the day, to make him appear a fool, the monks built a high throne that Shantideva had no way of ascending. However, when he arrived, he flew up to the top of the throne and then gave the teaching on the Bodhisattva's way of life. It is further said that when he came to the last chapter, he rose into the air further and further until only his voice could be heard. If this story is true, then verse 17, May all who say bad things to me or cause me any other harm, and those who mock and insult me, have the fortune to fully awaken, must have a special resonance. For Shantideva's wish for the monks would have been for their enlightenment. And these were the very same people who wanted to make him look like a fool and so chase him from the monastery. Pema Chodron calls this forgiveness on the spot. And if we can develop the attitude described in this verse, we will never have any occasion to resent anything others may do to us. Shantideva then goes on in verse 18 to say, "May I be a protector for those without one, a guide for all travelers on the way. May I be a bridge, a boat, and a ship for all who wish to cross the water." Here, the water refers not only to crossing the various waterways of our planet, but also to traversing the great ocean of cyclic existence. Shantideva is making the wish to be the vehicle that takes all those without a protector through the dangerous waters of cyclic existence to the far shore of enlightenment. He wants to be all kinds of help, both temporary and ultimate, for all beings. May I be an island for those who seek one, and a lamp for those desiring light. May I be a bed for all who wish to rest, and a slave for all who want a slave. In these lines, by being an island, he means a safe haven. And when he says he'll be a slave for all those who want one, he's basically saying that he will do whatever will help others with little expectation of return. May I be a wishing jewel, a magic vase, powerful mantras, and great medicine. May I become a wish-fulfilling tree and a cow of plenty for the world. These are all images of abundance in the Eastern cosmology. The wishing jewel is a gem that grants all the owner's wishes, and a magic vase is like a cornucopia, spewing forth all sorts of desired things. Powerful mantras have the power to cause our desires to come true, and, of course, great medicine cures heavy sickness. One of the continents in the traditional Buddhist cosmology has a tree that, like the jewel, grants all wishes, and another has a cow that provides everything for the people of the land. Shantideva uses these images to express how he wants to be a source of easy abundance for everyone. This kind of prayer is common amongst those aspiring to become bodhisattvas. His Holiness the Dalai Lama points out that in the text Precious Garland, Nagarjuna has a similar kind of prayer. Here are some verses from it. "May I perfect all the virtues for which all sentient beings hope, and may I always relieve the sufferings of all embodied beings. May those beings in all worlds who are distressed through fear become entirely fearless, even through merely hearing my name. Through seeing or thinking of me, or only hearing my name, may beings attain great joy, naturalness free from error, definiteness towards complete enlightenment, and the five clairvoyances, and throughout their continuum of lives, may I always in all ways bring help and happiness to all sentient beings. May I always, without harm, simultaneously stop all beings in all worlds who wish to commit evil deeds. May I always be an object of enjoyment for all sentient beings according to their wish, and without interference, as are the earth, water, fire, wind, herbs, and wild forests. May I be as dear to sentient beings as their own life, and may they be even more dear to me. May their ill deeds fructify for me, and all my virtues fructify for them. As long as any sentient being anywhere has not been liberated, may I remain in the world for the sake of that being, though I have attained highest enlightenment." Traditionally, it's said that bodhisattvas with high realizations try to manifest in whatever way helps beings. But even if we are still just aspiring to get to such a high state, we try to help them in whatever way we can. Although we may not be wish-fulfilling jewels or cows for all beings, we can still strive to put our own concerns aside for the sake of others and do what we can to help. Shantideva continues in this vein, but in the following verses, he covers the vow a person takes when he or she embarks on the bodhisattva path. The vow, called the bodhisattva vow, as practiced in the Asanga tradition, is a series of 18 main and 46 secondary commitments. though the Brahman Net Sutra lists 10 major and 48 secondary commitments. In any case, here Shantideva leads up to two verses condensing the commitments with a couple of introductory stanzas that go like this. Just like space and the great elements such as earth, may I always support the life of all the boundless beings. And until they pass away from pain, may I also be the source of life for all the realms of various beings that reach unto the ends of space. These verses lead on to two more that expressly commit to aspiring and engaged bodhicitta. Just as the previous sagatas gave birth to an awakening mind, and just as they successively dwelt in the bodhisattva practices, likewise for the sake of all that lives do I give birth to an awakening mind, and likewise shall I too successively follow the practices. In the first of the two verses, that is verse 23, he expresses aspiring bodhicitta, and in the second, verse 24, engaged bodhicitta. These two verses are very famous in the Tibetan tradition, and people who follow the bodhisattva path will often recite them daily. As Pema Chodron points out, it's not difficult to break the bodhisattva vow. A harsh word or a flash of anger does it, she says, so we cannot realistically expect to keep the vow purely. That is why Shantideva uses the word successively in both stanzas. We do what we can, renew our commitment every day, and try to get better and better at keeping the vow as time goes by. You have to be patient with yourself, says Pema Chodron, and give up hope of always getting it right. The Bodhisattva teachings talk about three approaches to helping others through developing bodhicitta: the king-like approach, the ferryman approach, and the shepherd-like approach. In the first, the king-like approach, a bodhisattva works to gain his or her own enlightenment before leading all others to their enlightenment. As Pema Chodron says, we can't truly show others the path unless we've already trod it. So, like a king leads his people once he's throned, the bodhisattva first becomes enlightened and then leads others to that state. The ferryman bodhisattva realizes that all beings are the same, and so works for his or her own enlightenment while also helping others to enlightenment. Like a ferryman ferries himself and his passengers all together over the water. We use our suffering to connect to others' suffering to develop empathy and understanding, and also use our happiness or pleasure as a basis to wish for happiness and pleasure for all others. Pema Chodron describes it like this. Like me, all beings experience themselves as the central character in life's drama. Like me, they're enslaved by attachments and aversions, hopes and fears. No one wants to experience physical or emotional pain any more than I do. We all want to feel safe and free from fear. With this as the basis of our bodhisattva training, we reach out beyond our self-centered version of reality and bring others into our lives. When our own depression or resentment arises, it becomes a stepping stone to understanding the darkness felt by others. If we have insomnia, a toothache, a burn or cancer, instead of making us retreat into our own little world, it becomes the basis for empathy and loving kindness. The shepherd-like approach is regarded as the best. Here, the bodhisattva decides not to become enlightened until all other beings are totally free of dissatisfaction and suffering. I, this bodhisattva says, will work until everyone else is out of samsara before I liberate myself. Of course, this is a most commendable attitude, but it is also the most difficult to maintain unless we have gargantuan amounts of compassion and empathy. From time to time, we might do something that automatically puts someone else's happiness before our own. But for most of us, it's not realistic to hold to this model continuously. I like Pema Chodron's advice to use whichever of the three models suits the situation we find ourselves in. Instead of rigidly trying to follow one, we make use of all three in our life. To awaken bodhicitta, she says, we start where we are and go forward step by step. Shantideva then rejoices in having made the commitment with the following verses. In order to further increase it from now on, Those with discernment who have lucidly seized an awakening mind in this way should highly praise it in the following manner. Today my life has borne fruit. Having well obtained this human existence, I have been born in the family of Buddha and now am one of Buddha's sons. His Holiness has quoted from a text saying that only when we have fully realized bodhicitta, the mind to attain enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings, will we become bodhisattvas. We are not even on the bodhisattva path when we only have aspiring bodhicitta. However, here, Shantideva implies that the moment we have taken the vow and follow the practices, we become one of Buddha's sons, in other words, a bodhisattva. This, says Pema Chodron, is very encouraging for our spiritual journey. Thus, whatever actions I do from now on must be in accord with the family. Never shall I disgrace or pollute this noble and unsullied race, says Shantideva. Now, according to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, the family and the unsullied race here refers to the Buddha nature that we all have. And the descriptor unsullied points to the fact that this nature is so pure that even demons appreciate the bodhicitta that partially defines it. His Holiness tells the story of one Geshe who was practicing bodhicitta in a forest where some non-human creatures lived. These creatures had the thought to harm him, but when they realized that he was actually more concerned for their welfare than his own, they gave up all such thoughts and left him in peace. Actually, a similar story is told about how the Buddha came to preach the Karaniya Metta Sutta. Some monks were meditating in the forest, but were being harassed by dryads, spirits associated with the trees. The monks went to the Buddha and asked him what they should do. He gave them the Karaniya Metta Sutta and told them to meditate on that. The dryads were so affected by the loving kindness that the monks radiated by meditating on the sutra that they no longer interfered with them. Of course, while we are practicing either bodhicitta or metta, we are weakening our own unfriendliness and aggressive tendencies. And so these practices bring us great protection, not only against our own negative minds, but also against the harmful minds of others. His Holiness calls bodhicitta the most valuable gem in the entire universe. It is, he says, in both the long and short term, the greatest of benefits. Now, this might be so, but having taken the bodhisattva vow, we must be careful, because if we think we will never transgress it and that we will always act in accordance with the family or the unsullied race, we're being a bit optimistic. The truth is that taking a vow doesn't make us perfect beings. We're still caught up in our old bad mental habits, and these are sure to leap out at us when we least expect them and make us act in ways we now recognize as shameful. However, that is no reason not to realize that we made a mistake, pick ourselves up, and continue to try. Pema Chodron's commentary says our aspiration has to be so strong that even though we know we will fail to keep the vow and act sanely from time to time, we are determined not to be discouraged or to give up. Without trying to measure up to some unrealistic ideal, we aspire to move in the direction of further sanity, she writes. We don't want to squander this human birth by strengthening negative habits that weaken our capacity for enlightenment. Shantideva continues with his praise of the bodhicitta with the following verse. Just like a blind man discovering a jewel in a heap of rubbish, likewise by some coincidence, an awakening mind has been born within me. Now we are heavily polluted by karma and afflictive emotions, but out of the blue, we've come across the Buddha Dharma and have gained faith in bodhicitta. This is so rare, says Shantideva, that it's like a blind man finding a jewel in a rubbish pile. His Holiness says in his commentary that if we really look at our situation in samsara, we can see that it's pretty dire. But having found this mind that wants to gain enlightenment to best benefit all beings is immensely fortunate. Even just the bodhicitta aspiration can turn our most negative emotion into the basis for compassion, our fiercest anger into the foundation for wishing everyone to be free of aggression, even our worst enemies, says Pema Chodron. It is the supreme ambrosia that overcomes the sovereignty of death, says Shantideva, It is the inexhaustible treasure that eliminates all poverty in the world. Now, quoting teachings by Maitreya, His Holiness says that although we can obtain a fortunate rebirth through practicing the 10 virtues and so on, cultivating bodhicitta will immediately purify negativities and accumulate such enormous amounts of positive potential that we can more easily find a favorable rebirth. Bodhicitta also has great power to counteract the afflictive emotions and so lead us to liberation. On a more mundane level, His Holiness also points out that bodhicitta makes the mind more calm and peaceful. So the elements making up the body can more easily stay in harmony. This means we have a much better chance of living longer and avoiding an untimely death than if we were always giving in to anger and other afflictive emotions. If we habituate our minds to unhealthy states, even rituals and ceremonies to prolong our life will not be of much benefit. Training in altruism, His Holiness maintains, is the best guarantee for a healthy body. Pema Chodron similarly says that bodhicitta is the elixir that makes nothing of death, and more importantly, destroys dualistic thinking. And for her, poverty in this verse refers to the poverty of ignorance. Bodhicitta, she glosses, is the inexhaustible treasure of non-dual, non-conceptual awareness that heals the poverty of ignorance. Now, I'm not quite sure whether that isn't reading into Shantideva's words a bit more than is actually there. For actually, the poverty of ignorance is destroyed by non-dual wisdom realizing the nature of reality. Though I guess that is what bodhicitta points to. It is the supreme medicine that quells the world's disease. It is the tree that shelters all beings, wandering and tired on the path of conditioned existence. And here Pema Chodron says that the world's disease that is healed by bodhicitta refers to our most basic obscurations of dualistic perceptions and negative emotions. But His Holiness equates the disease to not being able to achieve enlightenment as well as not having a physically sound body. And in his commentary on the last two lines, he says that we are continually tormented by karma and afflictive emotions, and thus wandering and tired on the path of conditioned existence. But if we train in altruism, we will feel that the very purpose of life is to offer benefit continually to other sentient beings, and thus develop a deep sense of satisfaction, even though we are so contaminated. Our bodhicitta aspiration then acts like a sheltering tree, both for ourselves and for those we care for. And now, as the program draws to a close, I'm going to leave you with Shantideva's famous verses on aspiring bodhicitta and engaged bodhicitta as a dedication for this program. Please join me in this aspiration. Just as the previous Sagadas gave birth to an awakening mind, and just as they successively dwelt in the bodhisattva practices, likewise, for the sake of all that lives, do I give birth to an awakening mind, and likewise shall I too successively follow the practices. Thank you for joining me in the program today. I hope we'll come together again next week. Until then, I hope you have a very successful and joyful and peaceful 7 days. Goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.